Hello, I'm Jill Burridge, and with me in the studio today is Tom Hammond, Principal Conductor of the St Albans Symphony Orchestra and also Artistic Director of the Hearts Festival of Music, which is an annual celebration of classical music centred around Hertford. And as you'll gather in a moment when we start talking, Tom also has many other musical working hats to wear in the course of his career. So, Tom, this is an interview really which is part of a series that we're running, focusing on your job and what it entails. So let's start with the festival, the Hertfordshire Festival of Music. It was founded in 2016. How did it actually come about?
It was a happy accident, at least I think it's a happy accident, in that I had recently taken over the Hertford Symphony Orchestra, who needed a new conductor. And we were talking about how we could develop the work of that orchestra, who self-promote 6 concerts a year, which is an awful lot of work, and play to a very high standard. And I thought, you know, we could go and play for someone else. You know, we could take our orchestra to somebody else's music festival. And having started to learn about the amazing amount of music that happens in this county, I thought there would just be lots and lots of opportunity and lots of classical music festivals. So I was detailed at the end of that meeting to go away and research classical music festivals in Hertfordshire. Now, the thing is, there are some fantastic festivals. Of course, there's the Organ Festival here in St Albans, and there are lots and lots of chamber music series, but there was no dedicated, sort of, as it were, intense, because we've been, well, this year we're up to nearly 2 weeks, classical music festival going on in the county, which I just couldn't quite believe. And then I was chatting to my long-term friend and musical collaborator, James Francis Brown, who's a composer, and we accidentally decided to start a music festival. And that was, yeah, that was towards the end of 2015 that conversation happened, and 2016 is when it all started.
And it's really grown, because you started with just a weekend and now you're at
nearly 2 weeks. Yeah.
This is in the middle of June, I should sort of say, isn't it? Starts sort of,
that's right. So we it's the 13th to the 23rd this year, to be precise. But what we wanted to do actually was to be giving concerts around midsummer, because I think that sometimes going to concerts can be a bit of a pain for our audiences. Typically, you're travelling, it might be in the dark. When do you eat? You're going to eat before, you're going to eat when you get home, and all these sorts of things. And we thought, how nice if, you know, when you left a concert, none of our concerts are particularly long, actually. We've tried to think about that experience for the audience. And it's probably still going to be light, actually, when you leave. And also, Hertford's a very attractive town. People tend not to know it. It gets a little bit swallowed up, dare I say, because St Albans is a pretty big centre of population. But it's an interesting place, an historic place with lots of interesting buildings, actually. A fascinating link to the Knights Templar, which I won't expand on here, but it's something I'm researching, actually. Lots of nice independent shops and restaurants, same as St Albans has, of course. So, yeah, we've decided to pitch it around midsummer.
And you've managed to attract some really big star names. You've got people like Dame Emma Kirkby and Tamsin Little and Stephen Huff and Stephen Isserlis.
Yeah, that's right. So we really wanted to not muck about. We wanted to get some of the best people we possibly could, not least because it helps drag attention towards the festival. Also because these are all fabulous musicians and also very nice people to collaborate with.
Absolutely. So what are they playing, some of them?
Well, this year, Stephen Isserlis is involved in a number of events. He is performing the Haydn Cello Concerto, the first of the two. That's quite an early work by Haydn, and Stephen decided that he wanted to help set a bit of a theme for the festival this year, which is early works by great composers and contrast with some of the last utterances. So in the chamber music concert he's giving on the 15th of June, on the Saturday that he's with us, it ends with Fauré's string quartet, which was his last work. So hopefully that's quite an interesting thing for the audience to sort of compare and contrast very early pieces with those very late works. Stephen Isserlis is a huge fan, actually, of Fauré. And I think for those who know Fauré through the Requiem, they'll find all the things that they like there. But it's interesting to hear how his musical mind had stretched and developed.
Thank you. It sounds wonderful. Let's just go back to the Haydn. And I think you mentioned that there is actually a local connection for Haydn.
Yes, there is. We didn't know about this until the festival had been sort of born in our heads. But it turns out that Haydn spent a significant amount of time. The year was 1791. It was his first visit to the UK. He'd not that long been released from his shackles as an employee of a prince in a not particularly nice place. He moaned about it quite a lot. And a London concert promoter called Salomon had been desperate to get him here. And we have to try and put our heads into 1791 England, where a composer like that was a rock star. So this was front page news that finally the great Haydn that everyone had heard of and played pieces of his at home was actually coming to the UK. And he enjoyed an incredibly successful year, giving sold out concerts and being wined and dined in London. But he was finding London, actually Soho, where he was staying at the time, was pretty noisy. And he said he couldn't really get on with writing music. So he'd made a friendship with a man called Nathaniel Brazzi. I think that's how we pronounce his surname. No one seems to know. Who said, well, actually, I've got a place in the countryside. Why don't you come and have a bit of a break? So he spent 6 weeks living in a place called Roxford House, which is just outside Hartingfordbury. If people don't know where that is, that's...
It's very close to Hartford.
Very close to Hartford, yeah. And 6 weeks is quite a long time if you're a composer like Haydn, who wrote a lot of music very quickly. And he wrote back to his friends in Vienna saying how much he was enjoying it, how pretty it was, that he was spending his mornings walking the woods, learning his English grammar. And also he makes a very interesting, for people like me, reference to working very hard. And we're still researching what we think he might have actually written whilst he was staying in this house. It's possible that some of his most famous later symphonies were written right there.
We'll find out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So I think we can hear just a taster of that Haydn cello concerto. And your professional career, did you start out thinking you were going to be a musician?
It's all been an accident all the way along, because usually, you know, a lot of musicians come from families where music was part of family life and mum or dad, you know, played or sang or whatever. And actually, my family really didn't have any great interest in classical music at all. And how it all came about really was that in my parents' record collection, there were a couple of sort of nominal classical LPs, I think, to possibly try and slightly impress someone coming around for a dinner party or something. There was Chopin's Greatest Hits, there was Beethoven's Greatest Hits, and there was Sibelius's Greatest Hits. And apparently when I was about 8 or 9, I started playing Sibelius's Greatest Hits on some kind of loop, at which point my parents clearly could see that I was destined to be a bit strange, and that was true. I didn't live in an area where there was a huge amount of music going on, to be frank, and so I just fell in love with it kind of all by myself. And to cut a very long story short, I'd ended up playing the trombone because a neighbour had heard from my mom that I was very interested in music, and he said, oh, you know, I've got a trombone I used to play when I was younger in my garage, would you like to try it? And that was how I ended up playing that instrument. Eventually, I got a place to study at the Royal Academy of Music in London, where I did an undergraduate course as a trombone player, and then spent most of my 20s and early 30s as a professional trombonist doing all sorts of things, from symphony orchestras to playing at Shakespeare's Globe to doing stuff in the West End. You have to be diverse to make a living in music, frankly. But conducting had always been something that I'd had an interest in. And that was odd because I was pretty shy as a kid and no one had encouraged me to do it. I don't know where it all came from, frankly. But when I was 16, I promoted a concert in my local church for charity. And a few people said they thought I'd got some kind of ability. I kept doing conducting projects throughout the time I was principally a trombone player. And then in my mid-30s, there was an opportunity came up at Trinity Laban Conservatoire, which is in Greenwich. And the late, great Sir Charles Mackerras had basically bestowed this position for a fellowship in conducting, and I was very fortunate in being chosen to do that. And that was the point at which I decided I just was going to take a leap and swapped from playing to conducting, as my former trombone colleagues refer to it as I crossed to the dark side.
It's funny, the sort of brass section of the orchestra has quite a reputation, doesn't it? I think it does.
Yes, yes, I would say it does. I think they're all a gentler breed these days, actually.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
So how hard is it really to sustain a career in professional music?
It's incredibly hard, and it is getting harder, unfortunately. There will always be a space for the sort of top 1-ish% of performers, instrumentalists, who've got talent in bucket loads, and places like the London Symphony Orchestra or the Royal Opera House will need those sorts of level of musicians. But the rest of us, mere mortals, I think it's a question of music isn't what you do, it's who you are. And I sort of feel like I've had no choice. I can't think of what else I'd get out of bed to do. So somehow you have to try and make it work, and diversifying your career, working very hard, accepting that you're probably never going to be especially financially secure, all of those things. But I think if you're the sort of person, and I think a lot of my colleagues would say this is the case for them, that there is no real choice. It's just something that you
it's
are.
It's a calling, basically, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, without that's wishing where your to sound too pretentious. Lie. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Because you do have, as I said at the very beginning, you have a number of hats. You've worked with the Hertford Symphony Orchestra, as you mentioned, the Essex Symphony Orchestra. You've also worked in Yorkshire. So you have to be prepared to go wherever there's work.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, that's the case when I was playing, and it's similarly the case for conducting. So I've been lucky. I mean, I've travelled to some fantastic places, both playing and conducting around the world. A project that's especially close to my heart, actually, is with the amazing young musicians in Palestine, which came completely out of the blue. Was recommended to go and help coach a course with the Palestine Youth Orchestra. And although I'd performed in Israel some years before that, I hadn't visited the West Bank on that trip. So I went to this place that, you know, we hear about in such negative light in the news, and went with all sorts of fears and expectations of what I would find. And one of the things I didn't think I would find was classical music being done to an incredibly high level by teenagers. And that's a relationship that's now been ongoing for, I think, 7 or 8 years. Just a few weeks ago, I was in Dubai conducting a concert with an orchestra formed of musicians from the West Bank. And the standards that they achieve in music are phenomenal, actually. And it's such a positive thing in a place where, frankly, we're only ever going to really hear negative news about. But I discovered so much about history through doing that. Met some amazing people, had some amazing experiences, and that's one of the great things about music.
It is. Well, let's come on to the St Albans Symphony Orchestra. Presumably you had to cope with a lot of competition for that job, did you?
Yes. Well, whenever orchestras like St Albans Symphony advertise for a new conductor, you will quite easily have 3 figures worth of applications, because there are a lot of people out there wanting to do it and not that many ensembles for conductors to conduct. So it's a competitive process, but I luckily managed to fool them and have been there now for, I think this must be coming to my 4th season, actually, with the orchestra.
And do you choose the repertoire, what they're going to play at every concert?
It's part of a process. So we try to balance the things that the members of the orchestra would like to play with what we hope will attract a good audience. And it's a long process, actually, and we have to filter all sorts of things. But we're trying to do 2 things, I suppose, which is to present concerts where I know the musicians on stage are really excited about what they're doing, and that's very important. And make sure that we also put pieces of music in the programme that are familiar enough so that we do get people to come along, not least on New Year's Day, which is a fabulous tradition of giving a New Year's Day concert in St Albans Abbey, where we have, I don't know how many hundreds, but it always looks...
You're always packed out,
absolutely packed out. Mm. And it's a real thrill, although it's slightly trashy New Year's Eve for me.
So the concert that's coming up with the St Albans Symphony Orchestra, the very popular element is Grieg that night, isn't it?
That's right. So we've got Grieg's Piano Concerto. Now, that for me is one of those pieces that I don't care how many times I hear it or how many times I'm lucky enough to accompany it as a conductor. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's got so many elements of excitement, fabulous tunes. It's a virtuosic thing for pianists to be able to play. It doesn't go on too long. It's just a cracking piece of music.
And it's instantly recognisable from bar one, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And also in that concert, you've chosen to play some Nielsen.
I was introduced to his music by my old head of English, weirdly, when I was at school. And I was knocked back by how fresh it was. And something in the energy of this music is quite something. And it really grabbed me. When I then looked into him as a man, as a composer, I discovered that, a little bit like me, he didn't come from a wealthy family. He had made music literally as a child. He discovered that the piles of logs behind his little shack that this family lived in made different pitches because some were bigger and some were smaller. And he got excited by music through that and listening to birdsong. He basically lived a life of rural poverty. He was herding goats till he was 15. And then he went into the Danish army as a trombone player.
Ooh, so there was another
connection, yeah. And then he went on to write music. And because he'd not had a formal training at the beginning, what you hear in Niels is individual, but it's also so fresh because it's just coming straight out of his imagination, no filter. We're going to perform his fourth symphony, which has a subtitle of The Inextinguishable. And what that means is that human life and spirit is inextinguishable despite challenges. And this was written just after the end of the First World War.
My word, I mean, those drums are amazing.
Yes, so we have to employ, very rarely you get to do this, two sets of timpani. It's a hugely theatrical moment, and that's really showing the kind of peak of conflict, essentially. Mm. And the question is, will the orchestra be able to win through?
I get the impression that your career, your job, you've got hardly a moment to take breath.
It can be quite hectic. And one remedy to that that's been great for me, actually, was we rescued a dog from a rescue centre in Radlett. And the 2 hours a day I try to walk my little dog Patch, they are the kind of breaks from it all. Although I then find myself walking around the park singing whatever I'm going to be rehearsing that evening as well. But it's all consuming. And as I said before, it's your life, it's your existence if you're into music in this way.
You told us about one of the most moving experiences in your career when you went to play in the West Bank. Mm. I gather that you also tried to teach James Corden how to conduct.
Good research. Yeah, that was hilarious. I don't get a chance to watch much television. So I rocked up to a recording studio, and I remember the lady was doing a bit of makeup, and she said, "Oh, do you watch the show?" The show being a kind of comedy quiz show on Sky. I don't have Sky TV, so I had no idea. And it's called A League of Their Own. And I said, "No, I don't watch it." I said, "Do many people watch this show?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, about 5 million. At which point I realised this was going to be quite a public thing. But it was all good fun. So, yeah, I tried to teach James how to conduct the beginning of Beethoven 5. And we also had comedy opera singing as part of it. It was brilliant laugh.
Was he any good?
No, he was absolutely dreadful at conducting, which is weird because he's actually a very good musician. He can sing and play, but for some reason couldn't quite translate that to the waving his arms in the air part of it.
Thank you very much indeed, Tom Hammond, for talking to me today.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to Tom Hammond for coming into the studio and to Jill for quizzing him on his career to date. Also to Mark for recording and editing that item. Now, here's that website for the Hertfordshire Festival of Music so you can find out what's being performed, by whom, where and when. It's heartsmusicfest.org.uk.